everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Web. This is Jordan. Brian, how are you?
I'm here. it's another week.
Hey,
we're making it through. Sorts.
Yep. So we're into the second week here of quarantine life, settling in a little bit. Might be a while, is what it feels like.
As every day goes on, it feels like this thing will get pushed out further and further because it just seems to get worse and worse out there. I listened back to our episode from last week, as I usually do these days, actually, and my thoughts were all over the place last week in terms of, as we said, it was a pretty raw episode. I have a feeling we're in for another one kind of like that today. But, you know, after we got off that call last week, you and I were both commenting on like, man, that was raw. And it's so weird to podcast in times like this, you know.
It's a bit of a journal. It is.
I feel like you and I are really honest and authentic on this show. There's no doubt about that, but it's still...
there's no marketing.
No, of course. It still feels different in terms of like what ends up on air versus what I'm actually thinking about and working on day to day.
Okay. Is that just the filter of being recorded and listened to?
Yeah, I think so. Some of that and being in public and you know, worrying about what people are going to think when they listen to what we're saying here. And to be honest, most of the time I don't care about that kind of thing. And we've become more comfortable on air and everything. But here's the thought on my mind right now today. Today's Friday, March 27th. And I was commenting on this in a private Slack with a bunch of friends. And I'm compartmentalizing. That's the word that keeps rushing to the front of my mind in all this. And I think normally I'm very big on compartmentalizing. It's just how I operate mentally. And I think a lot of business owners do, right? Like things can be going crazy in our businesses, but we're able to mentally separate that from our home life and from the world around us and the day-to-day and even the good things and the bad things within the business. We can put this into that box and this into that box and keep pushing and making progress over here. In a time like this, I rush to that mental skill of compartmentalization, and I lean on it more heavily than ever in a time like this. Because, I mean, some of the news, I'm not going to go too dark on air, I promise, but like some of the news that is just rolling out day to day is brutal. I've started to tune out of it. I do check it out every day, but I'm checking it less frequently. And in a way, the less frequent checks make it even worse because I was like, I was listening to a podcast, which is basically a recap of today's news. And like the headline was like 100 deaths in New York yesterday. And I was like, wait, what? Like, yep, since yesterday. Holy shit. Like it's, you know, it just gets so exponentially worse as every day goes on. And I can get, you know, so angry at the government and this and that. I'm not going to get into that here. But I'm still pushing on the business. I'm still working every day. And it has not really impacted my ability to do work, my ability to make progress, my ability to work on marketing, work on product, code, talk with the team, talk with friends about business. Like that stuff is still moving forward really just like any other day of the year, to be honest. And I think that's good. I think that's healthy. I think frankly, that's the only thing we can do. I mean, I donate to some causes and this and that, but it's right now our job is to do our job, and that's build our business, keep it functioning and keep it growing. And a lot of other people depend on us to do that. That's the best thing that we can do. I can't ignore this emotional feeling of being torn. Like I have a responsibility to feel horrible about what's going on in the world and the news around me, especially in New York, which I'm from New York and I feel it just like everybody else, but I've got work to do and that's got to continue, you know?
Yeah. And it can be a healthy escape also to focus on something else. I had a really difficult week and then a strange experience yesterday. I mentioned on the last podcast that my wife was sick and we got her tested because it was at the point of requiring testing, and it came back negative. The few days before it came back negative, I was in a bad place. So I hadn't been to my therapist since this all started, because we usually meet in person. I had a session the other day before we got the negative test back. It was very interesting, and there's some analogy to what you're saying and how your brain works and compartmentalizing these different areas of your life, where what I do is I generate energy from challenge. You can't do X. It, for me, is the motivating force. That's what gives me the fire and energy that then sparks creativity and then action into making stuff and coming up with ideas and doing this checkout thing that you kind of aren't really supposed to do, and all these things. But applying that into a situation where you don't really have much control over, especially as horrific as what's happening, is a recipe for an enormous amount of anxiety. What I was doing was, okay, so my wife might have it, and that sparked the same creative energy of I'm gonna find out everything, and I don't care what people say, I'm gonna figure out what you're supposed to be doing and what someone's supposed to do to avoid the hospital, and what can you do to avoid pneumonia, and what chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, Tylenol versus Advil. I was so deep into it because I felt like, well, if this is going to happen to our family, I'm not just going to hang out and watch it happen. I'm going to do the same thing that I would do on the business front. I think my screen time was an average of 6 hours and 55 minutes per day. And 6 hours of that was on Twitter, digging into feeds and doctors and reading.
That sounds like my screen time normally.
Yeah. Yeah. So then yesterday we got the negative test results. And then I proceeded to have a relatively bad day at work. I had a few things not go the way I wanted to, and I got some news that I didn't like and whatever else. And I just didn't even affect me at all, man. It blended what is normally separated in my head, and it just mixed them all up. And I think that is one of the things we're all dealing with right now, that we are literally at home with our families. The people that we want to be with, protect, take care of. And there's so much fear around that. You know, it is really like, it's like scared. it's fear. It is wild. I remember when it first started, my dad's girlfriend that she called me and was like, your dad is coughing a lot and has a fever. Should I take him to the hospital? And the fear that hit me just from those few words was so, so strong that you don't even realize. You're like, okay, so I'm an adult and I'm a man. So I've kind of gotten used to, you know, being tough externally. And then that thing just cuts right through the whole thing. And now it's just this slow motion train wreck. And then you just can't get all the people you care about out of your head.
It's crazy,
and,
man.
It kind of overwhelms what normally I can compartmentalize, but I'm sitting in my bedroom right now. You know, it's almost like unavoidable now. Maybe you're partly good at because you work from home. And for me, I do have that physical difference of I go to the office, and that's part of my compartmentalization. And when I come back and I put a different hat on. But whew, it's tough to hold up right now on separating things out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is really great to hear that your wife's test came back negative. It's great to hear that you were able to get a test, you know, because a lot of people can't. I'm actually less worried about my immediate family here in the house. We're all healthy, and we take ridiculous precautions when we have to go out and get groceries and stuff. But my parents, just trying to get across the gravity of how serious they need to be taking this. Sometimes it's like I feel like they're not. They are, but it's the thing with my parents, and probably most people's parents, is that they've been crossing into this. They're at the age, you know, late 60s into close to 70 now, where it's like, and I hope they're not listening, but they're at that age where they're getting into the elderly population, and they aren't fully accepting that.
yes, understandable.
And it's understandable, right? And so they're separated, and they both are alone in their homes. And my dad lives in Long Island, New York. My mom lives in Connecticut. they're both still working, but my dad is an attorney in New York, and he's been going out to some closings which haven't been canceled, kind of crazy in some of these. And you know, everybody's fine, everybody's healthy, but you read these stories about what it's like to care for somebody at home who especially somebody elder who's going through the virus right now. And like, that just gets my mind rolling in terms of plans, in terms of what ifs and scenarios and action plans, and what if one of them were to get sick? Like, how do we handle that? Who goes to take care of them? Who's doing this and that? And you know, my brother's occupied doing the farming stuff. And it's just like, my way of thinking about everything, and this comes back to my house, is like, I'm constantly thinking about the future. I have a hard time thinking about the present. My mind is always thinking steps ahead. What are we doing now to make the future better, prevent crises and things like that? And like, I get comfort in coming up with game plans for different scenarios, even if they'll never play out, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense. And yeah, some of the conversations and plans are surreal. Yeah, it makes me think of my grandfather, who lived to 106 in Israel. He had this saying or way to look at life where he always said, young people live in the present. That's why it's so great to be young. And then you get into the middle ages and you always think about the future. And then in your old age, you always think about the past. So we are very firmly in the think about the future stage, and this cloud almost accelerates that, because dwelling on what's happening right now is not very empowering. You just, okay, so this invisible bug is just going to go around killing people and I'm going to be scared, or I can take action and do what's going to make things better in the future for both personal and business. And yeah, well, let's kind of bring
it. Yeah, I mean, on that note, you know, well, I want to get into business here, because one thing that you said really resonated with me a couple minutes ago is that within the business front, when things are going wrong and things are going badly, that does energize me. I've been feeling that 100%, 110% this past week, just feeling that creative energy. And it's motivating. And so basically, you know, right now, again, I think I said last week that on the audience ops front, it was a slow month. Well, that slowness continued over the past week. And it's still mostly stable, but it's definitely one of the worst months we've had. And so what happens there is that it actually does motivate me. And actually, in a weird way, it actually makes me really excited about the other things that I'm doing. What I've been focused on is like, even doubling down even further into the things that I was already, into the directions I was already going, you know, so we can get into some of that. But anyway, why don't we try to get into some structure today? What are you?
Yeah, I love the entrepreneurial mind that does that. Most people don't do that. This week has been very mixed, and I keep checking in with teammates, and they're having a very similar experience, because when we look at the business, everything's going really well. We've added MRR, so we're at an all-time high, and we are on track to match GMV just below November 2019, which is Black Friday, which is usually our biggest month by like 30%. And we're about to almost meet it this month. So e-commerce is definitely very, very strong right now. And our merchant mix, the people that use our software, is very much in line with the people who are doing well right now, selling health-related products, food-related products, things like that. So when we look inward, things are going well. But when we look around at each other, we're like, how the hell are you? Are you okay? What this, you know? So we're having a very mixed experience. And then for me personally, I've kind of taken it on myself to protect the downside first. So I've gone through the process of setting up access to capital. And that, it's almost like I just needed that before I could really move on. I just needed to know that we were on solid footing on that front. And if we needed money, we had access to it. I didn't feel comfortable focusing on the future until I had that in place. And I think that's my risk-averse side of things on the business. I think it's similar to the way I've run it in terms of like cash or the willingness to burn. It's very much in line with the approach so far. And now that that is starting to be settled, I'm now finding myself thinking about the future. And where that's mostly coming out is in marketing. But now we're working with a marketing agency. And so it's almost like just being excited for what they're doing. It's almost like they're leading now. We've kind of put our trust in them. We committed to them for this 90-day pilot program. And the first month is a lot of research. What's currently working? What's currently in place? What's missing? What SEO terms are working? Where traffic is coming from? Which content would resonate with them? So it's a 4-week period of research and content development, and then we launch the campaigns.
Yeah, that's cool, because it's actually something that I'm deep into right now in terms of content research and SEO keyword analysis. But let me step back a little bit, because I talked last week about how I view my business overall big picture in a portfolio of a bunch of different things, but really it's three main components of my business. There's audience ops, there is process kit, and there's productize. Process kit is still a big focus. I'm still hammering away on new features. We've got a couple pretty cool things coming out next Monday or Tuesday, and I'm working with the developer on that. The big energy for me in the past week has been doubling down, or I'm really thinking of it more like reviving my productize side of the business. I was sort of thinking about that before Corona came around, but when Corona really started to hit, I got even more energized about the idea that this is a side of the business and the industry in general that I think could thrive in over the next year and more. I got another sale today on the productize course. Sales continue to come in naturally with literally zero attention being paid and no new content in like the last 2 years on that front.
Is that what you mean by revitalize or revive?
I want to revive it in a number of ways. Still bigger picture strategy here. What I'm thinking is that, first of all, not think of it like a short-term thing just to drive cash or do this or that for a couple of months until this blows over. I'm not really interested in doing anything short-term. If I'm going to invest a lot of energy and time into this, I want to go big and long-term on this. And what that means to me is building this into a real business, like a training and community business property. Whereas before, in previous years, it was kind of just something like a side hustle that I did myself largely. I'll still be the driving force behind it, but I'm starting to think through plans on building teams and building processes and workflows and content strategies and product lines and how all that fits together as a standalone asset. So that's thought number one. But then thought number two is, this is merged with Process Kit, and in my mind, it's the marketing plan for Process Kit. And I'm not thinking of it like split focus or split businesses, even though of course it would require some like a lot more work and dual paths of work and things like that. That'll be hard to work through. But I'm really thinking a lot more now about how the top of funnel asset is the audience. And if I can focus that not necessarily on the processkit.com website, but to focus that on my productized properties. So like productize and scale is the main one where I have blog content and email list building kind of stuff. And I just started recording interviews for the productize podcast. And so if I can put a lot of effort into growing traffic there and growing that audience and selling the productize course and community, and that to drive revenue, but to drive a community and like a tribe, if you will, in this, which I've been doing for years, that is the asset that drives customers into Process Kit as well. And I've already seen that. There are several customers who have bought Productize in the past, and now they're paying customers of Process Kit. And I just see these really working together pretty well. My focus now for the next foreseeable future is to basically work equal amounts, more or less, on content for the Productize brand and continuing to push forward the product of Process Kit. And at times I'll be going you know, more one way or the other, but and building teams around me to keep making progress on both fronts. So I've got the developer working with me on Process Kit, and I'm putting plans together now for like video and audio editors, course and content people on Productize, community engagement people, accountability coaches, things like that happening on the Productize front. And yeah, that's sort of like the game plan. And like, as like step number one, just right now, like I've got a ton of plans that I've been speccing out and go and putting together plans and running them by my friends and advisors in private. But the first thing, like just take action right now, just get this going, is reviving my content and audience growth on the Productize front. And so basically I have started doing the Productize podcast. I recorded an interview yesterday. I've got interviews booked twice a week for the next several weeks now. And I'm going to start doing more YouTube videos, shorter, like answering a reader's question about Productize services and things. I ordered some, not like a new video camera, but some like shading and lighting and stuff, and trying to get serious about it, and planning on like hiring a video editor and just getting this stuff put together and a production process, so that I show up once a week and record two videos and then hand it off to my team and they get it published. And I show up once or twice a week, do a podcast interview, hand that off to my team. They're putting all the other pieces together. I can get that content engine revived. Like, I'm doing the work now, but it'll start publishing new things probably in about a month. Oh, and then just one more thing on that is on the SEO and content front, I'm working on productizeandscale.com, which is where I've basically, I've pruned a lot of the content. I did this a few months back to keep it focused just on the Productize service related articles. And now I'm doing like a big content analysis on that. I'm using like Ahrefs and Search Console and different things to figure out like which target keywords has it been ranking for, where are the opportunities, which content pieces do I need to develop, which ones do I need to improve, which pages should I redirect to others, which ones should I trash. I'm in the middle of that right now. I want to put together a game plan where maybe I'll write some new stuff, but I might bring on some of the audience ops writers to help improve and grow the content library. And the interesting thing for me is that this is actually kind of challenging, whereas because like I'm trying to be a lot more strategic now about traffic and SEO and keywords on this site. Whereas in the past, I wrote these articles really more about like, hey, here's the topic. Like, this is about Productize services and I'm trying to sell you, like freelancers and agencies and consultants, I want to sell you on the idea of Productize services. And I didn't really care so much about SEO and like targeting keywords and things like that. And that worked to grow the audience and the newsletter and the and things, but and growth sales for the course. But since the years of creating that content, I've learned so much more about being strategic about SEO and things. And I'm trying to just get more technical with it and make sure that we have exactly the articles in the library that are doing what they need to do to grow this traffic. And so that's sort of like my top of funnel effort now for the rest of the year, is to grow traffic here, because that's what drives customers to my products, you know?
Yeah, if you can get benefit from it both ways, through the course and through the software, then, you know, then you're not really splitting your attention. It's all going in the same direction. And I applaud your energy toward being more technical about it and doing that research underneath. You know, that's something that we did not do early on and wish we had. And ever since our like director of communication came on board, she had a focus on that. And then she worked with Ed while he was at the company. You know, our organic traffic is make up a significant portion of our new revenue now. And the agency we hired, basically first thing they do that technical analysis, see where things are coming from. So it's good.
You know, just again, like stepping back, because even before all of this, before Corona and before, when I was thinking through the marketing plan for Process Kit, like last year, late last year, early this year, I was thinking about like, well, how can I really grow traffic to Process Kit and grow the customer base? Because the product is pretty close to complete at this point. And like, how can we build on that early traction? And I was thinking through all these different things. And some of those ideas were like, well, how can I have like a top of funnel asset, whether that's a free tool of some kind, or like a or more traditional content marketing on the Process Kit site, or like a templates library, but nothing was quite fitting. I haven't really found that idea that like clicked, like, oh, like that's clearly the funnel that will work. But now that I'm energized about Productize, it's sort of like that aha moment is finally coming, where it's like, oh, that's the top of funnel asset that I was already looking for. And it's not even starting from scratch. I've already built a base that I just need to kind of revive and improve and grow now. So it's, and the audience fits perfectly. It's like, I feel stupid, like not even paying attention to that earlier and thinking about all these other marketing plans that like would be way harder to execute on than this that's sitting right in front of me, you know?
Yeah, I've gone through that so many times that now I give myself the space. So Rock and I had a conversation yesterday, and then we came away from it and said, okay, no conclusions. We'll talk on Monday. And then just giving that space and almost ignoring it. I don't think about it, and it just happens, and a new idea, and then leads to this thing. It's almost like I have these imaginary conversations with somebody else. You know, it's almost like whoever is involved, whether, I don't know, pretend it's an investor or a partner or a new platform, and I'm having this conversation, and it's helping me look at things from different angles. And it's all there. It's all the same set of facts. It's just how you interpret them that can give you these new ideas. So just to add something to the conversation that I think is relevant, webinar attendance rates right now are through the roof. So that is something that I'm seeing a lot of B2B software use. I know our agency said, look, across the board for them, attendance rates are at 60% plus. I have a friend here, John Ewalt, that runs Roaster Tools, that has been doing webinars, and his attendance rates are through the roof. So it is something to consider, that people are hungry for more information and help and advice, and they also have the time, and they're not in an office where they're going to meetings all day. So that's just something to consider in the mix.
I love it. Yeah. And I've been thinking about that too, as part of it may be one of these like low hanging fruit things that I could do very soon, is just announce a live event. I don't think it would even, I was thinking about like just doing like a live, like hangout Q&A.
Right. I'll be here from 1 to 2 PM.
Yeah. Bring any questions. We could talk about anything. We could talk about whiskey, or we could talk about business. That doesn't matter, you know.
I like what Rob is doing with MicroConf, and they're doing basically a daily hangout for a while. I'm doing it later today. It's Friday, so we will be drinking. And that's just, I think people want that connection and they want that involvement right now. You know, the agency we're working with had a crisis proof your SaaS, and that was incredibly popular. So there's definitely a lot to be done on that front around community building and audience building. It feels like it's not a hard sell, right? It's not like sales mode, but that comes out of the credibility you build along the way.
Community is what people are hungry for, especially in times like this one, we literally can't go out and hang out with people. So
yes, absolutely. And I haven't gone into like Zoom parties and like having drinks with the friends on Zoom. We have not done that. I think I can
we've
see
done one
that we well, will.
Well, so I'm in a group with the guys from both Big Snow events. We have like a private Slack, and actually now we have like this like private podcast among us where we can kind of communicate that way a little bit. And we did one private Zoom. We should do it again. I'm gonna message them. Even that group, where we chat throughout the year about business and stuff, but like that's even way more active now because it's like we're all at home, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to notice. Same with Twitter. Same with all these smaller communities in private and Slack. We're the same way in the Portland Slack group that we're in. And yeah, next week we're doing a happy hour with the company. You know, Wednesday, 4 o'clock type of thing. And I'm trying to do a daily Loom video where I just give a quick update, say hi.
Internal,
super casual. Right, today someone sent me a video, I'm embarrassed to even say, but Harry Styles, don't make fun, did Sledgehammer, you know, by Peter Gabriel. And that's nice. A great, great song.
It really is a great song.
Oh my God. And he killed it. It was on the Howard Stern show. So I was playing that and kind of like dancing. You know, everyone's just hungry for it, both the creator and the audience. On our side, I've been having fun. We are redesigning our marketing site. And, you know, that's rare. It just doesn't happen very often. It's fun to take out a blank piece of paper and think about, you know, the structure of your pricing page. What should this page have and why? And then you go through the process of having, you know, 30 Chrome tabs open among all the companies that you respect and then your competitors.
Where are you at in this process?
So homepage is done.
Okay.
That means the design system.
Yeah, the look and feel and all that is...
That's done, which is, you know, a huge hurdle. And the homepage is done, and that's obviously the most traffic page in terms of the site, not landing pages. And then we have the features page and the pricing page. That's where we're at now. And so we've put a little bit of a timeout on it and sent it over to the agency to get them involved along the way, because they have a very specific way they want to do certain things, like lead generation and having multiple entry points, right? One of the things that we have been sorely lacking is multiple entry points. We have apply for a demo for a $500 a month product. That's like the only entry point you have. And we really should have a chat bot, and we should have a lead magnet. We should have an email opt-in. And
yeah. And you know, like some people need to go through a few steps before they're ready for the $500 demo.
Yes. And we've been a bit arrogant maybe in that we had so much inbound demand that we have been focusing on the process of what happens after someone applies. We have not been focused on filling the top.
On like the website redesign, how did you go about doing that? Was it all in-house? Did you outsource to a designer? Did you involve other people like copywriters or UX people?
It was outsourced. We're using a company called Lightboard, which is kind of like a design team for hire type of thing. We talked to a bunch of people. We talked to freelancers. We talked to design agencies, and we ended up going with Lightboard. It's a company out of Seattle, and it's very modern design for hire. So right, you have a portal, and you work directly inside the portal, and they put assets, and you get feedback, and that sort of thing. It's gone pretty well. And then we use another company, a Portland company actually, called Reliable PSD, to turn the sketch files into a WordPress site.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah. And so we're trying to think through, you know,
what about the copy? Who's writing the copy?
We've been doing the copy in-house.
Nice.
Yep. So yeah. Lucy, our director of communications, is good at copy. And it's been very collaborative internally on the customer side of the team. So we look to the support team and success team a lot around what are people asking about? What are the most important features? What do people care more about? What are the questions that keep coming up? And so that's where we are now on the features page, where we think the features page is really where we can go more. We almost want to make it a control F page. So the homepage is going to tell you what the thing does and what the benefits are. And the features page, you want to be able to go to and just hit control F and write PayPal and just find PayPal on the page. Yes, it integrates with PayPal.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. And we have the features page on Process Kit too. And it's basically just a big grid of features, and you click on them and you see a video about that feature. It used to be our roadmap page. Earlier, it was like, these are all the features we've built, and these are some features that are coming very soon. Because I wanted to keep people informed of that. And I've since removed the roadmap part of it. And because the features has been growing, you know, and there's still stuff on the roadmap, but I don't want to be super public about it. Not because I want to hide what we're working on, but the priorities keep shifting around as different requests come up. And I don't want to like promise like this is coming next. I do want to improve that too. But you know, the point I wanted to make though is that like so many people seem to be, you know, when you're talking about marketing sites and copywriting, like, focus on the benefit and focus on the target customer. And all that's true, especially on the homepage and things like that. But for SaaS, you still need to show them the features. And I feel like now more than ever, people are shopping based on features, and they're comparing features, and they're thinking about switching from one tool to another, or they're comparing three to five different competitors, and they're literally going to, in their minds, at the very least, they're going to make a grid of like, this one's got this, this, and this. This one's got that, that, and that. And
factor in the price, factor in how it looks, factor in how it feels. So we do want to do more showing, less telling. So we have screenshots, and we actually have our own test Shopify store. So you can click on that and then experience the checkout as a shopper, which I think our merchants really care about. They're like, the software is important in what you can do, but they're very concerned with how it looks and feels to the actual shopper. Yeah. And then the pricing page, we're going to add in a calculator, which in the past I have kind of like rolled my eyes at, but I'm willing to give it a try.
Calculate like their cost based on their size. Is that sort of?
No, an ROI calculator, right? So we have enough numbers now. And so what we can do is say, what are your monthly sales? What's your average order value? You know, what are these key factors? And because the price is high. So we really want to be able to show almost why the price is high. Our customers, our ideal customers, it's still a no-brainer, right? Even though it's $3,000 a month, right? But it can make you $300,000 worth of upsell revenue. And so we need to show those side by side so that it's in context. Because, right, if you just look at it as $500 a month plus 0.5%, you can look at it and say, oh, that's a lot of money.
Especially if you position at it like this is, whether it's actual real data, but it's based on real data from Carthook, right?
Yeah, we have enough data now, so we can show.
And you could in the messaging for it, like this is based on data from the past 12 months or from the past several years of Carthook data. Like,
yeah, we have.
It's not just like industry research says that you'll get. Exactly. No, this is Carthook. You know.
Yes. So I mean, we have very very straightforward data at a macro level, and what we're thinking about is if we want to get more micro. So we had a great milestone we hit this past week. We crossed $1 billion in processed GMV for the platform, you know, since starting. So that's awesome, right? It's got a B in front of it, which is something that we kind of didn't really think was you know, in our wheelhouse. We're not going to shout about it from the rooftops because that doesn't feel right. But that's what we're celebrating at the happy hour next week. You know, it's a big milestone. Everyone should be happy. And now out of that billion, 120 million is from upsells. So it is real, real straightforward. At the macro level, look, 12% of revenue is upsells. So that's undercounting it because we have a lot of merchants that don't use the upsells at all. They use just the checkout customization. And so, you know, if you just put in, hey, 12%, you know, straight up, if you do $100,000 a month, $12,000 in upsell revenue, the product will cost you $1,000, but will create $12,000 you can't find anywhere else. I'm being open-minded. It is also interesting to see what competitors do. And at least one of our competitors does something very interesting where effectively every CTA opens up a chatbot that says, hey, do you want to see how it works in 3 minutes?
Is it a real person or is it a bot?
No, it's a bot, but it's well done. Anything, you go to the features page, or I normally would not like that, but if you are optimizing for conversations and demos, that might actually make sense. So you go to the features page and it'll say, learn more, how it works, get in touch, and every single one does the same thing. You click on it, opens up a chatbot on the right side of the screen, and it says, do you want to see how it works in 3 minutes? And you click on yes or no, and then if you click on yes, it says, great, what email should I send it to? Right? So it's email capture. If you say no, you go, okay, you want to sign up, do you want to hear updates about the product? What's your email address? And if you put your email address in, it says, great, what's your phone number? So it's just lead generation for their sales team. And it's at least worth thinking about a company. This company's raised $90 million, you know, at $1 billion valuation, all like 150 employees. And you're like, okay, so they're not short on resources. And they're not stupid. So it's just worth looking at and challenging your own assumptions when looking at all these different ways people do it.
Yeah, man. I still struggle right now with Process Kit. Like, there are so many things that I know I need to get moving on, and it's just sitting there in a non-optimal state, you know, especially when it comes to the trial sign up and onboarding experience and then trial to paid conversion. Because I'm getting, you know, multiple trials every day and some are converting, but it's there's all this like outdated information that they're seeing as they're going through the trial right now, but I'm working on new features and I'm working on this other stuff. So it's like, can't do that until, you know, but that, you know, it's all part of the plan. Like, I already committed myself to March and April into May to bang on these key features so that in May I can really focus on onboarding, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, man.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't want to delve back into virus land.
I know.
we talked about financing. It's Friday. We made it through one more week.
We did.
Yeah, I think this is a strange moment to have to focus on everything at the same time. So business and the future and then family and health and all that. It's just one week at a time.
Well, the good thing is that around here, the warm weather is finally starting to kick in a little bit. And so, you know, my girls and I are going outside a lot more now. So
cool. Our girls are going outside more because we've implemented a new form of punishment. When someone hits someone else, we make them run a lap around the house.
Oh, I like it. I like it. We might need to do something like that because they are – my 4 and 6-year-old are definitely, you know, at each other's throats fighting.
There's so much fighting. You know? Our four-year-old's a gangster. And now when she does it, I just look at her and I point outside and she goes, okay, puts her boots on, runs around the house once.
Oh, that's great.
All right, man. Well, be good over there. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Talk soon.
Okay. Later.